Have you heard of ESG? It stands for Environmental, Social, and Corporate Governance. Lots of buzzwords, which are essentially interchangeable with sustainable investing, socially responsible investing, or mission-related investing. It's really nothing new. It's the same concept being rebranded over and over again into a pretty new package and a fancy new acronym. Millennials are now the driving force behind ESG. So what happens when these objectives of ESG lead to poverty? We'll be answering these questions and a lot more. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be taking a deeper look at this ESG investing trend. ESG has become a major driving force, and in no other place has ESG been more influential and destructive than the African country of Ghana. The Central Bank of Ghana and the Ghana Association of Bankers launched the country's sustainable banking principles and sector guidelines in November 2019. Furthermore, in May of 2021, the Securities and Exchange Commission signed an agreement with the International Finance Corporation to help develop green bonds in Ghana. Ghana had an ESG score of 97.7 as the result of embracing a push for organic fertilizer and renewable energy. But the problems Ghana appears to be facing include a lack of consistent energy and food shortages. And it's not just in Ghana. Africa's 54 countries are responsible for 2-3% of cumulative carbon emissions from energy and industrial sources. These countries have missed the fossil fuel and industrial revolution, and while they have contributed virtually nothing to the current climate crisis, they will be the most affected by the changing weather patterns. Now, they're being told that they've missed the boat because these countries are being forced to not use their own fossil fuel in an effort to promote a green Western agenda. Western governments and private banks and all the ESG investors are denying them the opportunity to use fossil fuel and instead telling them that they should rely on solar and wind, but without helping them to pay for setting up the infrastructure. But what about Kenya? The new Kenyan president, William Ruto, has made a promise to switch from fossil fuel to clean energy. So how will Kenya implement the environmental, social, and governance criteria? For this, we bring in Collins Kinoti, ESG and sustainability advocate at Sustainable Square. So Colin, do you think it is hypocritical that African nations are being asked to transition to greener energies even though they are not really the problem here? Or I guess you could say they are a smaller problem when it comes to climate change.
Yeah, I'll take you back to your residence. When you're paying for the garbage collection, man, no one cares how much garbage you're getting out of your home. You have to pay for the garbage. And it depends on the estate that we are. We all pay the same fees, but our garbage is never the same. So I would say when it comes to climate change, yes, we might be emitting less than 2% of these carbon emissions, you know, that are being emitted globally. But the fact remains, when these catastrophes start hitting us, Africa will be the most affected continent. So I think there is no time to ask how much your percentage is to the contribution of all these climate change effects. It's all about coming together and doing this as a team, because if we start asking ourselves that question, I hate saying it, and it means we only leave one continent to fight all these things, because we know who is producing most emissions, you know, in our world right now.
And now Western banks are not financing oil and gas projects anymore because of climate change concerns. Those are quite valid concerns, but what do these African nations do without this financing, and how can they even develop?
The truth is, it's challenging, because that's the kind of financing that has kept us going for a very long time. But then we all have to remember, there is a price to pay if we really want things to be better and if we have to look the other way and say we have to practice responsible business practices or responsible, you know, social effective practices. So the truth is, we just can't stand up one day and say we are not funding them anymore. You know, it has to be a gradual process, because if we do that, then we start creating another problem even before we solve the other problem. So from where I stand, even locally, you know, financial institutions, there are financial institutions which are saying, hey, you guys, we're not going to fund you if you are doing these kind of activities. You have to switch to this other way. So personally, I believe it's a good move, and it's intended to create good and better results for purposes of making sure that we reduce the effect we are creating in the environment. But I think it has to be done in a systematic and strategic way, in that it doesn't end up creating a crisis even before we try to solve the one that we have right now. That's what I believe.
Yes, and Nigeria is a huge oil producer, and its vice president has said that no one in the world has been able to industrialize using renewable energies yet. Does he have a point?
No, it's a point you can debate, you know, in two ways. The truth is, the kind of renewable energy that we enjoy in Africa is untapped. Like, more than 90% of it is untapped. If you ask me, we can really develop our countries, especially in Africa, without oil and gas. That is true. Absolutely true. Because here's what I believe. I would tell you there is no country that's been able to develop themselves without electricity, not oil and gas. Machines will run in other ways. Don't have to use them. Like nowadays, I'll tell you the truth is, I'm shocked. I can go in town and choose which, you know, public service vehicle I want to use. Do I want to use electric vehicles, or do I want to promote the diesel vehicles? And the truth is, I'll always choose the other side. You see, I was listening to Elon Musk the other day when he was saying, when we started using these diesel and petrol, the steam engines look funny. And the truth is, where we are going, the diesel, the oil and gas will start looking funny to us. You see, you can imagine if you came across with a steam engine today, how that might make you feel. That the same way, this is going to end. So to me, I believe that is a thought of the past. The truth is, we can develop without oil and gas very much and in a very effective way. And that is where we are headed.
And now, without help and financing from developed nations, how will African countries be able to build out their renewable energy infrastructure? And how much costlier is it to build that infrastructure versus that for traditional fossil fuel?
This is one area I want to be honest with you. The reason why Africa, we are where we are right now, it's because of the financing help we've been receiving all along. Tell you what. I'll give you an example with my country. For instance, in Kenya, we have maybe the highest debt ceiling you can ever find in Africa. So we keep on getting this financing in terms of loans, that we can even call them grants. And what this financing does to us is the government raises tax for us so that we can pay the money back. So when the taxes are raised, that means our purchasing power is reduced. Inflation, you know, skyrockets. And these ends up making us beggars for as long as we will live. There are a few, more than 12 countries right now in Kenya, which are not dependent on any external financing. They have decided, let's run our country with what we have. It doesn't matter, you know, the kind of steps that you'll make towards your development, but that small one matters rather than, you know, digging a hole. You know, there is this saying in our language that says, if you find yourself in a hole, you just stop digging. So the truth is, we have to sit down and ask ourselves, for how long or how do we utilize whatever we have to further develop what we think we can, rather than, you know, think that external financing is the one that is going to help us build infrastructures that will help us utilize the renewable energy. We have to start small and keep developing and keep developing. You know, United States is not there it is because, you know, that happened in a day. No, you know, I think there are lessons you are learning from other countries that really proves if you manage what you have effectively and use smart strategies, you know, to create value across your value chain, these things will work. And right now, I believe it's the step even Kenya itself is taking. We have to really reduce our appetite for external financing.
Thank you so much for coming on. Collins Kinoti, ESG and Sustainability Advocate at Sustainable Square.
I'm glad that, you know, I'm here with you guys today.
ESG programs may be well-intentioned, but they are having a significant impact on countries in many places. So, is ESG just a fad? How long is it gonna last? We'll have more after the break.
Все для того, чтобы максимально обезопасить и довести их живыми. Поехали. Уходим, уходим, уходим.
Я запереживала, конечно, что нас засекли, что именно били, потому что мы там ходили. Но ребята говорят, нет, слава богу, а то они бы ложили бы. Обошлось.
Орудие!
Выстрел!
В 2014 году автобус с горловскими беженцами расстреляли, сожгли. Там были мои дети, но они чудом выжили. Вот. Ну, любой бы на моем месте пошел бы, наверное.
Давай помогу.
Да.
Да стойте, стой. Давайте просто.
Да, спасибо. Маленький, иди сюда, сынок.
Огневую позицию занять. Наводите. По цели готов. Поехали.
Каждый раз получаю удовольствие, потому что с каждым моим выстрелом приближается время нашей победы.
Конечно, страшно. Но я уже приняла решение. Я здесь. Бывает такое, что нервы сдают, хочется поплакать. Нельзя это показывать. Мне нужно, чтобы ребята шли в бой с настроением, с сильным духом. Да, я рискую жизнью, но у меня есть цель. Если мы это сейчас не закончим, будет хуже. Мы должны победить.
Первый раз машина с гуманитаркой. А у нас ни воды, ни хлеба, вообще ничего.
Здесь продуктовые наборы, здесь есть все.
Обстреливают еще нацики, понимаешь?
Азовцы, если находили московские телефоны или что, убивали в хлам.
Нацики отходили, просто заливали бензином с канистр, подпаливали и уходили.
Люди очень боятся, чтобы сюда назад не вернулась Украина.
Детей можете отдельно собрать, сейчас закончу сладкая розанка.
Главный принцип – все, что собирают люди в России, донести непосредственно в руки нуждающимся здесь, на территории Донбасса.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything, where today we are talking about the cost of ESG policies around the world. While the goal of ESG movement might have had good intentions, it has now evolved into a marketing mouthpiece littered with hypocrisy. The costs of implementing ESG principles are significant. So for most businesses, it is more beneficial to simply create false impressions about having incorporated ESG metrics into the business model. This is otherwise known as ESG color washing, when companies claim to promote sustainability goals, social progress, equality, and diversity, while in reality, they are merely sugarcoating the status quo in order to win over consumers and investors who want to support ESG principles. Now, to understand how this game is being played, you have to understand that the US capital markets are dominated by passive investment funds like BlackRock, State Street, and others. These funds own on their clients' behalf about a fifth of each S&P 500 member. That's quite a significant chunk of company stock. Now imagine if you are one of these companies. You have to rely on these funds in order to stay afloat, as they are your core shareholders that you have to make happy. And since the trend is now ESG, these funds now all require their holdings to be ESG compliant and be active participants in social change in order to get their investments. So as a company, you really have no choice but to adapt and acquiesce to the fund manager's wishes if you want to be included in his portfolio. This kind of top-down enforcement creates an environment filled with hypocrisy, as now ESG becomes just a basic requirement on a checklist, not a movement that means anything. For more, let's bring in Daniel Gross, who is the director of the Center for European Policy Studies in Brussels, to help us break it down. Daniel, do you think this ESG trend is a short-term fad, or do you actually think it is here to stay?
ESG is something which is here to stay because it corresponds to deep-seated beliefs of many investors, perhaps more in Europe than the United States. But there's a bottom-up demand for ESG products, and our financial institutions will deliver it. And therefore, it's going to stay around for quite some time.
And should companies speak out on social issues? If you're a business that just makes widgets, should you be forced to take a stand on anything environmental or social? Or is it enough to just produce good quality widgets and give people good jobs with good wages? Why can't companies just stay in their lane anymore?
I think most companies would like to stay in their lane and just produce their products. And I think for many of them, that is actually possible. However, there are a few which are more exposed, perhaps in the energy sector, companies which have sourcing from, let me say, dubious countries, countries where human rights are not really respected. And I think these companies have to make an effort to show that they're not looking only at profits, but also in take into account some of the values which also the customers think are important.
Does ESG investing actually make a difference? Are companies really beholden now to a higher standard, or does the entire system still lack proper checks, verifications, and accountability?
ESG is still not really mature. I think when it started with companies which were anyway going along these lines, companies which anyway wanted to follow the ESG criteria. But now it's becoming more serious. It's becoming more serious because people are actually checking what companies are doing. And more investors have discovered an interest in ESG type investing. And therefore, I think it will have an impact going forward, although so far the impact might have been limited, with one exception. I think there already has been some impact on the oil and gas industry. We had less exploration because of ESG than we would otherwise have had.
And now you mentioned the possibility of the fall of the oil and gas industry. Do you think these kinds of social pushes could change what companies and products are marketed and become successful?
Yes, there is one area where ESG might be somewhat counterproductive even, in a sense that if companies in the West at least spend less on oil and gas exploration, and even less on coal exploration. That has two consequences. First of all, countries which do not care about ESG, countries with poor human rights records, might actually then increase their own expenditure and investment on exploration and therefore become major producers. And also, lack of investment by Western oil companies would mean that there will be somewhat less oil available on the market, and therefore there will be somewhat higher prices for gas, for oil, and for energy in general. And that, of course, hits the poorest strongest. So there's some tension there between the ecology and the social side.
And now, do you see ESG investments and its ripple effects almost benefiting the wealthy and being detrimental in creating a larger wealth gap?
No, I don't think ESG investment will have that large of an impact. It might have marginally affected energy prices and therefore might have had a negative impact on the distribution of income. But I don't think this is large enough compared to the bigger trends, which we have seen in the US, for example, over the last 20 years. But we must also see that over the last 2 years, actually, since COVID, income inequality has been somewhat reduced. And therefore, I think we can look critically at ESG, but these larger forces, especially post-COVID, are much more important.
And while striving for equality and workplace diversity are great in principle, is there such a thing as too much wokeness in the workplace today, where millennials are placing too much values in these qualities and it's harming the overall workforce?
It's unlikely to become an overall harm for the workforce and its productivity. There might, of course, be a few instances where the wokeness goes too far, but we are still at the very beginning, and many researchers find that a somewhat more diverse decision-making mechanism is better. And since we have seen that the world is full of very unexpected shocks, to have a more diverse decision-making is actually good. Of course, you will make mistakes here and there, but on average, if you are more diverse, you are prepper, you're better prepared for a more dangerous world. And that overall is a good thing.
Are oil and gas companies specifically being helped or harmed by the ESG movement?
I mean, oil companies in the short term had somewhat more difficult financing conditions, and that did harm them. But now the situation is very different because prices are so much higher. And also people realize that we need some energy. And even if it's not coal, then we have gas, which is much cleaner than coal. And therefore, I think companies which are in the gas business, actually for the time being, have nothing to fear from ESG.
And now, are ESG investments being directed into oil and gas companies simply as a desire to boost the bottom line return for funds? Or how are these principles aligning with that of traditional oil and gas companies?
There's, of course, first of all, a more emphasis on the way the oil or the gas are being produced, because even there are ways to have more or less emissions. And even more importantly, for gas, it is now clear that it's much better to use gas than coal. And therefore, to some extent, ESG can now claim that at least it is less harm than the alternative. That's already one step forward.
Daniel Gross, thank you so much for being here. Now, on this show, each week we talk about winners and losers. Today, I'm focusing on the losers. The losers are the consumers who actually care. There are many people who really sincerely care about the planet, about advancing social causes. But when all that gets twisted into a meaningless marketing phrase, ESG investing becomes something that does more harm than good. It becomes the opposite of solving problems and instead just sugarcoats the problem by repackaging it. As famously depicted in HBO's Silicon Valley, every company wants to make the world a better place, which then just becomes a meaningless catchphrase. Today's ESG efforts is like giving wheatgrass to a cancer patient. There are misaligned incentives, and the industry is just filled with hypocrisy every which way. The public persona is that of the cigarette industry in the 1970s, which externally boasted about caring for their customers while simultaneously killing them. So in the end, what started out as truth becomes a lost message as companies try to capitalize on the hot new trend. The question is, will the real cost of ESG be in the countries and people it destroys while doing nothing to save a planet it claims to care about? Thanks for watching. I'm Christy Eye, and I'll see you next time as we continue to break down the cost of everything.